today here on Radio Naturopath, I thought it would be germane if I talked about colds and flus, that this is a good day to talk about that. So I think we're going to do that. So there's all kinds of things to talk about. One of the reasons I wanted to do that is because so many people around me are kind of feeling that way. They're kind of feeling under the weather and they're getting colds. But the big thing that I see is that people will get sick and they stay sick. And they stay sick for several weeks at a time. It's like they catch a cold, they feel it coming on, they go through the usual cold stuff, and then they're coming to me and they say, well, I got this cold on Christmas Eve and it's January 10th.
So what's with that? I run into that problem sometimes.
You just
can't shake it. It's like you're not like really sick, but you're 90% better, but not quite better.
Right. So. I know. So it's really kind of interesting. And I see it all the time. I really think that the biggest problem with that is that people don't rest. And that's what it is, that people, they get sick. I don't think that's the only reason, but I think that's the biggest thing that I see, that people, they get sick and they're in their lives and they don't take time off to heal. And just the way that the immune system works, your adrenal hormones are what pushes your immune system. The adrenal hormones are responsible for making it so that your white blood cells do their thing, and they push out compounds like lysozymes and complement and all that good stuff to help to kill microorganisms. And if you're busy doing other things and using your adrenals to, you know, just do stuff, it doesn't even matter what it is. I mean, if you're using them to think, if you're using them to exercise, to run around, to continue to go to work, then they're not going to be as available to fight the illness. And so you're not going to fight it completely. So you have the thing about having an illness, it's not just that you have a virus in your body. It's the inflammatory response that it causes. And you can have the virus mostly gone and not have gone through the convalescence stage, the stage where you get rid of the inflammation. So I think that convalescence stage hangs on. So when people feel like they haven't shaken their illness, they may in fact have killed off their virus, but their immune systems are down and the inflammatory response is still present because they haven't allowed their liver, kidneys, their immune systems, their lymphatics to clean out the rest of the mess. And then if you have on board, if you have allergies, that can perpetuate it. So that's kind of what I see. So you get this inflammation and you just haven't taken the time to clear it. I know this is hard for people to do, but I can't say it often enough. If you get sick, the best thing to do is call off your life. If you can take a sick day, do it. It's absolutely essential. And the main thing you need to do is rest, preferably sleeping, and get as much sleep as you can, because if you're not doing anything, if you're busy not doing anything, your adrenal hormones will be available to fight the illness. So while you're sleeping, those adrenal hormones, you're not using them for energy, you're not using them for exercise, you're not using them to think about stuff. They are completely available to run your immune system. And the other thing that people don't realize is when you get sick, and if you don't let yourself recover and you don't let yourself heal, and you get back to it too quickly, you're going to be dragging through everything you do. The converse of that is if you take the time to rest, if you take a couple of days off and you take the time to rest and really just lie around and do nothing, you're going to come back stronger than before you were sick. I can't emphasize that enough. I know for myself, I mean, I had the good fortune to, the last time I had a cold, I caught the cold. I started to feel the scratchy throat on a Friday. So I finished the work day, and then I realized that I was in fact sick. And then it wasn't too hard because it was the weekend. It wasn't too hard to turn my life off. So I spent the next day in bed. I just slept and slept and slept. And the day after that, I did a little less sleeping. And the day after that, I did some stuff and realized I wasn't quite right. So I cut back. And then I went back to work the following Tuesday. I was kind of okay. But what I really needed was more rest. So one of the things I do is, you know, that I exercise a lot. I don't get to exercise. I mean, some people will continue to work out through their colds and flus if they're very dedicated to it. I don't think that's a good idea. You know that if it's above your, if the symptoms are above the head, you can go ahead and work out. But if the symptoms are below the head, you shouldn't. I'm like, if you're sick, lie down. Go to bed. You heard it here. It's okay. It's okay to not be industrious and set aside all of the things that you're doing. I know. And some of you are saying, there is that that funny commercial. It's a commercial for a popular cold remedy where you'll have a parent. Usually it's a parent who's telling someone, they look like they're in a business situation, and they're saying, I'm just going to have to take a sick day tomorrow. And then you have a child or a family looking at them going, what? And the blurb in the commercial is, parents don't take sick days. They take this cold remedy, which is kind of cool and kind of awful in my estimation, because it's really encouraging people to not take time off. And I also get that that is people's reality. And again, if you have a way that you can rest, if there's, and if you have to slow down on your kids' activities because you're sick, that's okay. Your kids don't have to do everything every single time. You got my permission here. If they have a basketball practice and you're sick, they don't have to go, because if you, you have to realize that what happens when you catch a virus, all right? So if you have a cold, realize that a cold is a virus. Viruses are passed, cold viruses are particularly passed by droplets, what we call droplets. So droplets are when you cough or sneeze, this spray comes out of you. So that's why we try to get people to cover their mouths. And the preferred way to cover your mouth now is to sneeze into the crook of your elbow. And that way you're not sneezing onto your hand. Why wouldn't you want to sneeze onto your hand? Because that's what people used to do. Because then you're getting the germs onto your hand. You're getting the viruses onto your hand. Then you're going to go touch something. And guess where the place on a building or an office that most of the germs are? Guess
I know,
where it is.
I know where it is. I know where it is.
Where?
Doorknob.
Brilliant.
Yes.
And why would that be?
Because everyone grabs for the doorknob
you
to open and close it.
Got it.
Right.
Exactly.
Yep.
So I have...
That's why... You know what drives me nuts? You
what?
want a little rant on this one?
Okay.
Here's a rant.
Go for it.
So you go in, you use a public restroom.
Yep.
Okay. And you get done using your public restroom. And what do? You go over and use the
wash
public restroom sink and you wash your hands.
Yeah.
And you towel your hands off or you blow your hands off. And then what do when you walk out?
Touch the doorknob.
Yeah.
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 And you don't know if
you don't know if the person before you wash their hands.
That's right.
Right?
Right. So
So what do we do about this? This is kind of a, I mean,
would you like to ask my sister Nancy?
Oh my God.
Because she'll tell you.
Yeah, she carries.
She has a thing that she does. Well, or she grabs a paper towel.
Or slides her hand into her sleeve.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what she does.
She
literally addresses that. I wash my hands and trust my immune system. That's what I do.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to be really intense about it, if you're in a public place where they have hand sanitizer in that public place, because often now supermarkets have hand sanitizer available for you if you want it. They have it at the Willimantic Food Co-op. In the front of the Willimantic Food Co-op, they have a hand sanitizer station. And most grocery stores now have that. You could also carry a little bottle of hand sanitizer with you if you like. By the way, if you're going to do hand sanitizer, avoid triclosan, which is an antibiotic and has been shown to lead to antibiotic resistance. Triclosan has pretty much been taken out of most antibacterial products.
Right.
It's not, they're taking it off the market if they haven't already completely taken it off the market. But do make sure that that's not in something that you're using. So that's a really good point. If you're in an office situation, I do have an office member, a staff person, who does go around with disinfectant and will clean off the doorknobs, which is a great thing to do. And that's if you have an office and you have control over that, that's something that's a reasonable thing to do. Whether you use a product like Lysol or whether you use just more hand sanitizer, that's an acceptable thing to do. Or whether you use a disinfectant that you got at the health food store, washing the doorknobs frequently through the day at an office is a good idea.
Oh my goodness! I guess you could probably bring those alcohol wipe things.
That's
right?
Another thing you could do.
You could just wipe the doorknobs down with that.
Alcohol wipes, and there's also you can get bleach wipes that you can keep at your office if you want to.
Yeah.
Yeah. So those are possibilities, and so that's how people get sick. They mostly get sick because somebody coughed or sneezed. It somehow got onto their hand, and then they touched a surface. And then you touch the surface, you touch your face, and that's how you get sick. And that's why schools are just incredible vectors for illness, because you try to tell little kids to take care of that, and little kids aren't thinking about it. You know, they wipe their noses with their hands if they're running, and mm-hmm. then they go back to what they're doing.
And if they sneeze, they instead of sneezing into their elbow, which is, you know, the best way to do it, they sneeze into their hands.
They might sneeze into their hands, if they even do that. Or they sneeze.
Or they just sneeze into the air and disperse it all over the place.
You got it. Yeah. And to watch where a sneeze goes, there's videos online.
I know there are. I've seen them. They're really scary.
I know. The droplets disperse far and wide. It's really amazing.
Really goes a long way. Cover your mouth when you sneeze, folks. And cough, too. Coughing is another one.
Right.
If you could see where your cough goes. It's amazing where
yeah.
it goes.
So if you're on a plane.
Oh, don't talk to me about the Petri tube.
Yeah, so that's the problem with a plane.
Yeah.
And, you know, people travel this time of year. People want to get out of the cold. I just came back, as you know, from Florida, and I'm going to go back to Florida at the end of February.
Mm-hmm.
So planes are particularly problematic
because
you're boxed in this little room, and you're stuck in an area, and you have to hope that the people you're next to aren't sick. And, you know, that people are touching random surfaces. And if people cough or sneeze and it disperses, the air is recirculated.
Right.
So
and
it gets.
Yeah, check me on this, but I think they recirculate the air that's in the plane because of the pressure.
That's right.
So nothing comes in from the outside. Of course, you're sitting in the middle of the biggest and best fresh air ever, but they don't bring that air in to the airplane.
No, they recirculate the air and filter it, and then the little particles get redispersed.
Right.
So being on an airplane,
you can be in the back seat of the airplane, and someone could be in the front seat of the airplane, and the person in the front seat could be sick, and the person in the back seat could not, and yet you're going to get their germs.
Doesn't matter. Yeah, doesn't matter. So I don't know what you do about it. What you do about that is you protect yourself. And
try,
so one of the ways to protect yourself is when you get off the plane, it's a really good time to use your neti pot and gargle. So let's review. The things that are not taking medicine, that are not like just actually taking medicine or a supplement that help you with your health, that are just hygiene things. So one of the hygiene things, of course, is to, when you cough or sneeze into the crook of your elbow because it's a place that you don't use to touch stuff. And then when you get a minute, if you could wash it off, that's a good thing. And if you're sick, whatever you sneezed into, throw that in the wash at the end of the day. That's the end of that day. Don't, like, wear it again. So if it's a jacket that you don't generally wash after one wearing, wash it.
mm-hmm.
Okay? So that's a good thing to do. If it is a jacket that you don't tend to wash, find a way to disinfect it. If you can wipe it off, if you can use a little if you can use sanitizer, if it's not going to damage the fabric. If you can't do that, then I would use some mild soap, some, you know, whatever kind of soap that you like to use, with some tea tree oil in it, and clean off the crook of the elbow of the jacket that you used. Yes, it's going to make it smell. There's a number of herbs you can use, a number of essential oils you can use. You can use tea tree. You can use rosemary. You can use red cedar. You can use thyme, T-H-Y-M-E. Those are all great essential oils that are antimicrobial. And so then the other thing, of course, is the good old neti pot, if you're able to use it. Not everybody likes to use a neti pot, but the neti pot, you can learn instructions how to use it online. Or if you purchase a neti pot, there's instructions on how to do it. I always try to make sure to tell people to bend over double when they're using it. I like to use a neti pot with sea salt, depending on the size. My preferred amount is half a teaspoon per 8 ounces. Your preferred amount could be a little more, a little less. If you have too much salt or too little salt, your nose will feel irritated. The reason for the too little salt feeling irritating is because you want your solution to be hyperosmotic. You want it to be hypersaline. In other words, you want the concentration of the salt to be greater than the concentration of the salt in your nasal passages. In normal saline, your nasal passages are 0.9% saline. So you want there to be more than 0.9% salt in the solution that you're using. And that way, because what will happen is if the solution is too dilute, you're going to be putting more inflammation. You're going to be putting more fluid back into your tissues. And okay. that's uncomfortable when it's going in. So when you put enough salt in, you're going to draw the fluid out of the tissues because the rule of osmosis is fluid travels from it travels from an area of low concentration to an area of high concentration across a semipermeable membrane, which is what your mucous membranes are. So if you put a saline solution that has a higher concentration of salt than the lining of your nose, the fluid in your nose is going to come out. It's going to reduce the inflammation in your nose. So so that's a really that's what you're looking for. And so salt, osmotically, if you have a hypersaline solution and there are microorganisms in your nose, they're going to die. And it's great. So the salt, what lives in the Dead Sea?
Salt.
Nothing.
Nothing. Right.
Nothing but salt.
Exactly. So nothing can live in the Dead Sea because when you have that much salt, nothing can live in that. It's just osmotic. The bacteria and viruses and fungus can't survive in that. So it's awesome. And so when you do the essential oils, you're just getting extra you're just getting extra benefit. And also the essential oils tend to have an effect on the circulation of the nose. So you get that lovely opening sensation in your nose. That salt doesn't quite do that. But, you know, you take a hit of eucalyptus oil or thyme oil or tea tree oil. It has that nice opening cooling sensation inside your nasal passages. So if you can't do the neti pot, remember you don't have to do the neti pot. If you want to do a bulb syringe, you can do that. You can also take a Q-tip, dip it in salt water, and a tiny drop of essential oil, and you can swab your nose out. Not everybody likes to pour salt in their nose. There's a couple problems. Not everybody likes to pour the water into their nose. And the other thing is some people are so obstructed that if they try to do the neti pot, it doesn't go through to the other side because your nose is patent at the top behind right. your nostrils. There's a communication between the two sides. But if your nose is too inflamed, you're not going to get it up there. What I tell people to do is, like, if you wake up in the morning and usually a neti pot is good for you, but you have a cold so your nasal passages are very full, when you're lying down, of course, fluids pool distally. They pool in your extremities and they pool in your head, and that's why your face is puffy. And your face is going to be puffier if you have a cold, and your nose is going to be puffier. So you may have to stand up and walk around before you can do your first successful neti pot in the morning. So I recommend walking around, drinking a hot drink. That usually a hot drink will get things to start flowing. If you want to put something spicy in the hot drink, if you can handle that first thing in the morning, a little bit of cayenne pepper or ginger can help to get things moving. The other thing I like to tell people is to take a warm washcloth and wring it out. Take a washcloth and wring it out in warm water and put it across the bridge of your nose. You can just do the warm washcloth if that works by itself, or you can do alternating hot and cold where you do 3 minutes of the warm washcloth, 30 seconds of washcloth that's dipped in cold water, and you alternate three times. And that'll tend to get things moving. And if you can't, try as you might, you can't get the neti pot to go through, you can just do that. That can be helpful.
What if you have a deviated septum?
Right. So
does that run into a problem?
Yes. So let's define deviated septum. So deviated septum, in fact, almost nobody is perfectly symmetrical. A lot of times, if you have not had your nose, have had plastic surgery on your nose, nobody's nose is perfectly symmetrical. So to that end, most people have a somewhat deviated septum. Some people's septa are so deviated that the mucous membranes touch on the inside of the septum. But before I go any further, let's explain what a septum is.
Right.
So go ahead, touch your nose.
Touch
the very end of your nose.
Okay,
everyone
out there in radio land also, touch your
nose.
Don't
do this if you're driving.
Please don't do this if you're
driving. Touch the tip of your nose.
I'm there.
And then keep working your finger down so until you're at the little divider between the two nostrils that attaches the tip of your nose to your face. And then if you go either to the left or the right, there's a nostril. Mm-hmm. Well, that thing at the bottom there is called the septum. And the septum is that has a divider that has skin on it that's outside your face. And then when you go inside your nostrils, it's a cartilaginous structure. So it's a structure made of cartilage.
I was going to say it's cartilage, not bone, because it's flexy, a little flexy.
Yes, it's made of cartilage. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean it can't break. It can break.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so if you feel it, if you go a little bit inside your nose above the nostrils, you'll feel that it starts to get hard. But it does move, like Ron says, and that's the cartilage. That's exactly right. So people can have deviated septums that are congenital, meaning that they had them from birth, and they can have a septum that's been deviated because they've had an injury. So
punch in the nose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You could have had, it could be a pugilistic injury.
A what?
Pugilistic injury, an injury from boxing, from being hit in the nose.
Oh, being hit in the nose.
It could be
or
an
getting
injury.
In a fight or something.
Getting in a fight, but a lot of times.
Or running into a door.
Right, running into a door. But the other thing is sports.
Right.
You get hit by a ball. That's more often how it happens.
Definitely sports has a high incident of it.
Any ball sport.
Mm-hmm.
You name any ball sport or any sport where you're running around and you could get clocked by somebody.
Yeah, you could fall off your bicycle and break your nose.
You can. That's not so common.
It's not as common, but it could happen.
No, bicycles, just because you don't hit that part of your face usually. Usually it's the ribs and the collarbone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are the big ones for a bicycle. But, so you could get a deviated septum if you have a fall and you have a break and the septum will deviate to one side. And then the big problem there is now the septum could be so far deviated that the actual septum is touching the lateral side of your nostril there. And it can also be that it's just deviated a little bit, but then when you have swelling, the side that you're deviated to is blocked off. And I invite you to try this. Again, don't do it if you're driving. But go ahead and block one side of your nostril and breathe in and out and see how well you breathe. And block the other side and see how well you breathe. And see if you breathe better on one side or the other. If you breathe better on one side, you may have a deviation to the opposite side. You don't necessarily have a deviation. The other things that can cause blockages on the inside of your nose are polyps. So if you've had a lot of inflammation over many years, like you have allergies or you have sinusitis or repeat sinus infections, the tissue becomes inflamed and irritated. And because there's so much inflammatory compound that's going in there, that can incite more cellular growth while you're fighting it. And you can get these little structures that are non-cancerous, but they're called polyps. And the problem with polyps is they block your nasal passages.
Hmm.
So if your doctor figures out that you have a polyp, if you have an ear, nose, throat doctor that figures out you have polyps, they could take them out for you. Some people, it benefits them to have sinus surgery. If their polyps are so bad that it's affecting their breathing, every time they get any inflammation at all in their noses, everything gets so blocked off. And, you know, because sinusitis can be very uncomfortable. You can get really bad headaches from it. You get a lot of pressure sensation. You can get pressure sensation in your ears just from having blocked sinuses. And so sometimes removing the polyps is a good thing to do. So, so getting back to why am I sick for so long? Well, it can't. So again, using things like the neti pot, the other thing to do is don't forget, it's not enough to just use the neti pot and clean out your nose. You need to clean out the back of your throat. Why? Because that's where the viruses hang out. They collect and they multiply in the back of your throat. That's why you get a sore throat or a scratchy throat, because you're getting inflammation back there. Your white blood cells are coming out to play, and they're going and they're beating up on the viruses. So you're going to feel that in the back of your throat. Usually at the start of a cold, they'll start collecting there, but they don't seem to stay there. That your sore throat tends to go away, and then you get all the sinus symptoms, depending on where the particular virus likes to hang out. And so it's very important to gargle as well as use your neti pot. And gargling doesn't have to be a big deal. Sea salt can be a great thing. If you want to buy a mouthwash, you certainly can. Just if you buy a mouthwash, make sure it's alcohol-free. It's better if it comes from the health food store. Health food store mouthwashes can have lovely things in them like chlorophyll. They can have more essential oils like tea tree and, like I said, thyme oil and red cedar oil. They can have a lot of nice things in them, lemon oil, all of which can be antimicrobial. You don't have to do that. You can buy a little bottle of tea tree oil. One drop goes a long way. You can do a little bit of sea salt in maybe a quarter cup of water, of warm water, with a drop of tea tree oil, and that's a great gargle. And if you neti and gargle every day, you'll be much less likely to get colds and flus. Because when you catch a virus, you have about a 48-hour window in which for the virus to take hold and for you to get sick. And so if you're using a neti pot and gargling every 12 hours, you're going to hit, you're going to be well within that window. And so you might be much less likely to get sick. So, so that's important to do. And so the other thing we talk about is washing your hands. And Ron talked about something very important, washing your hands after you go to the bathroom. So, you're more likely to catch GI bugs if you don't wash your hands after going to the bathroom, because, you don't know what people are carrying. If you have a really strong immune system, that may not happen to you. I'd say that for you, Ron, your GI is a weak spot. So it's especially important for you to wash your hands when you leave the bathroom, because you don't know what you have touched. And in fact, you know, if you, you know you're going to be in public toilets for much of a day, if you're traveling on an airplane, you may want to carry hand sanitizer with you. That might not be a bad idea. If you're on the airplane is when to carry the hand sanitizer with you. In fact, I don't know why they don't. I was about to ask a really silly question. Why don't the airlines just hand out hand sanitizer as a perk?
Why is that a silly question?
Why is it a silly question?
Yeah.
Because they don't hand out anything. They hardly hand out anything.
Oh,
anymore.
It would be $12.50 for a hand sanitizer. Right.
Well, they charge you
for everything now.
Well, I'm talking about a little tiny one. You know, a little pocket-sized one.
Right.
That, you know, you could buy at the store for a buck or less.
Maybe the hand sanitizer companies might take note of this and, you know, get some
have
free
it as
advertising.
A premium on,
right.
on an airplane.
Yeah, it's a free
it
advertising.
Be a bad thing.
Not a
but
bad
the
deal.
Thing is, you can go into the bathroom on the airplane and you can wash your hands. Although that's less practical.
Back to the doorknob.
Well, and it's less practical if you're not in an aisle seat. And so I know for me, if I'm sitting in the... If I'm sitting in the window seat, which I sometimes like to do, I'm less likely to nudge my seatmates and say, I have to get up, even though that's a really good thing to do. So the airplane, yeah, it's a place where you're going to pick stuff up. So other things I want to remind you of that are not necessarily a supplement is how you eat. This time of year, well, we just got off the holidays, and Ron, you and I are pretty good about not gorging ourselves on chocolate, and we have a lot of chocolate in the house.
Pretty good, but I'm having a hard time staying away from it because it's still there.
Uh-huh. So
yeah.
You're picking at it.
I'm picking at it.
And I'm really good about having maybe one or two. Like, I haven't hit the Kisses and the Reese's.
I'm really not good about it.
Yeah, because, well, they have them. They're on the counter.
They're in front of me, so it's really hard for me to leave it alone.
Yeah, and I'm a little bit better about that, but I will. So I limit myself, and we have our stash of chocolate at the office, and I'll have one or two tiny squares during the day, and that's it. And if I bring in the other things, the Kisses and the Reese's and stuff, they get eaten. So, yeah. So you have to be careful of that stuff, because if you know in your Christmas stocking or your Hanukkah gelt, you get chocolate and you get a lot of sweets. And of course, there's a lot of eating out and there's a lot of merriment and festivity. And there's a lot of sugar involved in that. And there's also a lot of alcohol, or there can be a lot of alcohol involved in that. And so remember that alcohol. That both of those tax your liver. They both tax your liver. Alcohol particularly, the problem with alcohol, of course, is it taxes your liver. And you need to remember that your liver is an amazing organ. And one of the things it does is it produces immune compounds for you. So if you're drinking a lot of alcohol, you're going to be more likely to get sick. The liver, when you put alcohol into your body, the first thing your body does is, oh, there's alcohol in here. Uh-oh, got to get rid of this stat. So it takes a lot of resources of your liver, whatever's in there, magnesium and B vitamins that are cofactors to detoxify. And they're also cofactors for your immune system. And so your immune system is not going to be as available to take care of stuff because your liver prioritizes getting rid of alcohol. So the more you drink, the more you're going to be likely to get sick, and you're going to stay sick. And I know people like to have a toddy while they're sick. It's not ideal.
Okay.
Although on the other side of that is, I do recommend if you have a tincture, if you have something, an herbs extracted in alcohol that are antimicrobial, that does work. You know, if you do a tincture and you're, but again, you're probably not using, you're not having the same quantity of alcohol as if you're drinking whiskey or wine or something like that. Hmm. And if you're trying to keep your immune system healthy across the holidays, cutting back on alcohol is a good idea. The other thing is sugar. Sugar is inflammatory, and sugar slows down the functioning of your white blood cells. And if the more sugar you eat, the more inflammation you have. And as simple as if you tend to eat sweets and you tend to wake up in the morning with a congested nose, if you stop eating sweets, your nose will be less congested. I invite you to try it. I mean, it's no fun, but I invite you to
try it. It's no fun. Yeah. I gotcha.
Yeah.
Less sweets, wake up less congested.
Yeah, it definitely. Like when I go in a complete sugar fast, I notice that my nose is less congested, regardless of how dusty the room is, regardless of mold. Because that's the other thing, that when you consume sugar, mold loves to eat sugar. And guess whose nose mold is in?
Everyone's.
You got it. Exactly. Yeah. And mold is a weird thing because mold, your immune system looks at mold. Mold is so evolved. It's evolved in such a way that your immune system just doesn't really know what to do with it. So it causes a chronic irritation of the nonspecific immune system in your body. So your nose is always congested. That's why doing the mechanical things to get rid of it and using antimicrobials, things that will kill mold, in your nose is a good idea. So not just the salt, but the things like the tea tree oil and all those things, tea tree oil, oregano oil, thyme oil, red cedar oil, eucalyptus, those will all kill mold. They're all really good for doing that. So put a little drop of that in your neti pot. You may have better success with keeping your nose clear of all sorts of stuff. So we talked about one of the reasons people stay sick is one of the reasons is they simply don't rest. And another is that they simply don't change their diets. That if you change your diet while you're sick, you'll tend to get well quicker. If you're tending to eat a lot of sugary foods or starchy foods, sugar and starch are the thing you do not want to focus on. It's really a good idea to cut back and eat broths and eat lots of vegetables and eat things that are easy to ingest. Depending on your illness, you may be craving cold things or warm things. I know for me, if I catch a cold this time of year, I want everything to be hot. I want to have hot drinks and hot soup. And so that tends to be a good direction to go. I want to have spicy things. So horseradish, cayenne, and ginger are all great things that are spicy and can help to clear out your nose.
But they make your nose run.
Which if your nose is blocked up, that's a good thing.
Okay.
Yeah, because it's going to help to release some of that congestion. And if you eat spicy food regularly, spicy foods are anti-inflammatory. They also will help to keep your nose clear more regularly.
How about tomatoes?
So tomatoes are interesting. So it depends on who you talk to.
Yeah, because I'm looking at something here, and it says tomatoes are number 5 on their list.
Of
things to keep you from getting stuffy nose.
Keep you from getting a stuffy nose.
Yep.
Okay. So it depends on who you talk to. If you talk to Peter Diadamo and his father, Mr. Diadamo, who's in heaven now, James Diadamo, who's in heaven now, they talk about tomatoes as being a panhemagglutinin. In other words, it will cause the immune system to not work as well. So that really depends. And so if you're a person who's allergic to tomatoes, like you don't do well with them digestively, whether raw or cooked, then you shouldn't eat tomatoes. On the other hand, if you don't have any sort of problem with tomatoes, tomatoes have neat stuff in them. They have lycopene in them, which is a wonderful carotenoid. It's in the same family as beta carotene. And lycopene can be really helpful for preventing illness. And it's really helpful for preventing especially cancers. And so that's probably a component in tomatoes that is protective against illness. The other component in tomatoes is vitamin C. So any of your foods that have vitamin C in them are going to be helpful, and tomatoes is one of them. Yeah, and you've also got strawberries. Although strawberries, this is not a great time of year to be eating strawberries. They're not local. They're obviously not local. If you can get them from Florida, I think that's okay because they're believe it or not, strawberries are in season in Florida now. When I was down there last week, we went to Detweiler's, which is this lovely Amish grocery in Venice, and they had it looked like strawberry season. There were flats and flats of strawberries everywhere. Mm. You can buy tons of strawberries because strawberries are growing right now in Florida.
Right. Right.
So Plant City, Florida is, if you go to Plant City, Florida, you'll sing a song. You know what song you will sing?
No, I don't.
Let me take you down, 'cause I'm going to Strawberry Fields. Mm-hmm. Yep, well, they are Strawberry Fields in Plant City, Florida.
Forever.
Strawberry Fields forever.
Yeah.
Yes, so there's tons of them there. So if you can get them from Florida, I think that's okay. If you're getting them from much further away, they're not going to have as much nutrition content, and I'm worried about the pesticides. I was going to say
they spray them probably
too.
Well, they might spray the ones in Florida also.
Strawberries need pesticides, unfortunately, to survive. So that is something to be concerned about. If they're not organic, you could be looking at a lot of pesticides. If you insist on eating strawberries that have been sprayed, then I would use a mild soap or a special pesticide wash. You can get pesticide washes in the produce aisle, any grocery store, and food co-op, and you know, you can get fruit washes and produce washes, and they are edible. I wouldn't sit and eat them, but I mean, you can spray off your produce and then eat them confidently. So it's better to do that than to simply rinse them with water, because the pesticide washes will have a soap in them, and if they're fat soluble pesticides, you'll help to get some more of that stuff off. So citrus, the thing about, so this is interesting, because the strawberries you're going to eat this time of year are not going to be local. There's no way. They're going to be coming from Florida, but they can be grown locally. So they are, when the idea of you eating things that are local is kind of interesting, but they're really not, because they're being grown in Florida, which is a different bioregion from here. And the other thing is citrus. Citrus is in season in Florida right now, so the stuff that's coming up is wonderful. So what I tell people is, if you feel healthy when you eat citrus, now is a good time to eat citrus because it's in season. When I was in Florida last week, my mother has in her yard, she has an orange tree. And she said, you know, those oranges are juice oranges, so they're really messy. And I'm like, I don't care. So I would go out to the tree every morning and I'd pick an orange. I'd select it with my own hands. And what's interesting about these oranges is that they have a bloom on them. A bloom is a kind of microbial composite. It's got, you know, bacteria and fungus and stuff. And it doesn't mean the fruit is rotten. It's just what grows on the fruit. That's called bloom. If you get blueberries, they have that little white sheen on them.
Yeah.
That's bloom.
Oh, okay.
And that's a microbial composition.
But
so
it's not harmful, right?
No.
Yeah.
No, but when you pick these oranges, the bloom on these oranges is black. And then you can take it inside and you could scrape it off and it comes off. It's a microbial composition. And so then I cut into these oranges and they are, in fact, extremely juicy. But they're so good because you just picked them from the tree and they're really sweet.
Yeah.
And the other thing that she has in her yard is a Meyer lemon tree. Meyer lemons are interesting because they have, when you cut into them, they smell kind of piney. And Meyer lemons, they're the size of a small orange. They're shaped like a small orange. They're not shaped like an oval like the lemons you're used to seeing. And they're a little bit sweeter. So I was using the Meyer lemons in the iced tea that I made every day, which was awesome. So anyway, the thing with citrus this time of year is that citrus is a good source of vitamin C. It's also a good source of bioflavonoids. So bioflavonoids are compounds that are in a lot of produce, especially in citrus. It's in the pith. So
the pith.
The pith. Yes.
Right.
So you know when you
P-I-T-H.
Eat, you got it. So you know when you eat a grapefruit, the inside of the rind has that white pithy stuff.
Right.
That's where the bioflavonoids are. And so when you're eating the actual grapefruit, there's stringy stuff that you can pull off, and then there's the white bits that hold the grapefruit together. Well, there's bioflavonoids in that too. So if you have organic grapefruits or oranges or lemons, it's a good idea to use the rind in recipes because you get bioflavonoids from it.
Mm.
That's where citrus bioflavonoids come in. And they're wonderful anti-inflammatories.
Hmm.
Yes. And so getting citrus, you can get vitamin C and you can get bioflavonoids if you eat citrus. By the way, you can eat peppers and you can eat tomatoes and you can eat Brussels sprouts. They all have vitamin C in them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Vitamin C is something that can be helpful for your immune system. And it also, it's part of the structure of collagen. And collagen is part of the structure of your mucous membrane. So if you have adequate vitamin C, your mucous membranes are going to hold together better. So the Willy Co-op did something really humorous. They said they had a little sign and they had samples of the different, because they have lovely varieties of different oranges. There's there's all these hybrids like Tangelos, which is a tangerine and a grapefruit. And then they have different tangerines like your Satsumas.
Yeah.
And then they have the orange, the Caracara, which is a grapefruit and an orange. And all these, a pink grapefruit and an orange, and blood oranges. So they have all these free samples that you could try. And there was a little sign under it that said, scurvy is so 1717. Get your citrus now.
Yeah, when was the last case of scurvy discovered? I mean, it's pretty much, we don't really
do
talk about
scurvy.
Does anyone have scurvy anymore?
Sometimes they can. If you are a picky eater and you don't eat produce and you're not taking a supplement, it can happen. You know, if one of the things to do is if somebody comes in with gingivitis, if they come in with inflamed gums, ask them about their vitamin C. Are they eating enough vitamin C? Because sometimes people don't. If people are really picky eaters, they don't eat produce.
Scurvy is still present in developed countries.
Well, when people eat too much processed food and they don't eat foods with vitamin C in them, that's what can happen. You and I eat our big old salads most days, and when we're not having salads, we're having stir fry, and you know, we have our turkey breast and our chicken breast, and we have it with, you know, veggies, and so, you know, we're not really in danger of having scurvy. I had a grapefruit over the last 2 days, and you know, I tend to eat more citrus, and so we're just really, it's not a thing for us.
Right.
But some people don't eat produce. It's really, you know, it's really an issue.
Yeah.
So
we eat a lot of produce.
We do.
And
so eating produce in general, your leafy greens are just packed with nutrients that are going to help you with your immune system.
I made you a lovely leafy green salad last night.
Yeah, you did. It's all true.
Yeah.
Yes, very nice. So one of the things, so if you want to get rid of that cold that's been hanging on, among the things to do is rest. Among the things to do is hydrotherapy, depending on what symptoms you still have. So now if you still have a cough that won't quit, again, the virus may be gone, but you haven't convalesced, so you still have the congestion. And if you haven't, like, cut back on your dairy and cut back on your sugar or your alcohol, you may still have some congestion there. We love to tell people to do strong ginger tea.
Mm-hmm.
And ginger is a wonderful anti-inflammatory, and it's great for getting rid of a cough.
It tastes good.
And you have to do a strong ginger tea. Would you like to tell people how you make the ginger tea?
Oh, it's really simple. It's like the simplest thing I've ever done. You just take raw ginger root, and you grate it in some shape, form, or manner. I use a food processor to do it because it's real quick. And I take, a good palmful is what I call it, a good palmful, and put that with about a half a gallon of water or so. Bring it up to a boil, let it simmer back down, and then let it sit for about an hour or so. And I like to throw a couple of sticks of cinnamon in there, too. It's kind of nice.
Yeah.
Adds a little extra flavor to
right,
it.
Right, that's antimicrobial, really nice. Too. Yeah.
And you just let it simmer. And when you get done, you take it and pour it through a strainer, and you have the most intense ginger drink you've ever had.
And you simmer it for an hour, at least an hour.
At least an hour.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, just let it simmer. You know, just bring it to a boil, bring it back down, and just let it simmer.
Yeah.
And the house smells great.
Yeah.
It smells really good, and it tastes great. And sometimes you get about 3/4 of the way through, and you can't stand it anymore because you've been smelling it. And so you go and you kind of scoop out a little mugful.
And you can put
honey in it. That's been
known
to happen.
You can put honey in it because honey is also great for coughs.
That's the best thing to put in it as far as I'm concerned. I like the honey in it.
Well,
yeah.
Honey also has been studied. There's been studies on honey where honey has helped coughs more than cough syrup. more than things like guaifenesin and, you know, and also really? And other cough medicine. Yeah.
Well, it has kind of that heavy cough syrup feeling when you put it in your throat. So maybe that's part of how it suppresses the cough a little bit.
And I think the level, there's some bioflavonoids in it. And also, especially, there's bioflavonoids in it, especially depending on what the bees have been eating. And George Bailey this year, or was it last year? He had an incredible batch of honey that was black. So beautiful.
Yeah, we have some at the house.
Oh, my goodness. And so that, I told him, I just praised him for his beautiful honey, and I bought a whole bunch of it because I told him, you know that your honey, this is really amazing honey because it's got a lot of bioflavonoids in it because it's so dark.
I think he's hoarding it for you, too.
Aw,
he's always
nice.
Got some for you whenever you get there.
I've got more of the honey.
Yeah,
but we have to get through what we have.
Now we have a lot of black honey, right?
So here's the thing. If you want to use honey medicinally, now, I do encourage putting it in your tea because it's going to help your cough. But if you want to use it medicinally, it's kind of got to be raw. So you don't want to, if you put it in your tea, it's too hot.
Right.
That's not raw. Because
right, because it's going to be over 150 degrees.
120.
Probably. 120 degrees.
Right.
Excuse me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
and,
I try to.
Is that the magic number, 120?
Yes. I try to put Mr. Bailey's honey, you know, take a spoonful of it or stir it into other things. You don't just have to get Mr. Bailey's honey. There are many other places you can get honey, and what you want to look for is a honey that's really dark, because then it's going to have a lot of flavonoids in it. Even better is to get the honey that still has the beeswax in it that hasn't been separated, because then that's truly raw. And so that honey is going to be more like creamed honey. It's not going to be that liquidy consistency.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another thing to do. And so that you might want to take spoonfuls. You can have it in yogurt. You can have it. You can spread it on bread. You can spread it on fruit. Use it in recipes where you don't cook it. And then it's going to be as raw as possible.
Or you can just take a teaspoon and put it in your mouth and go,
Yeah. So the other thing is Manuka honey. So Manuka honey is interesting because Manuka honey has been studied to be very antimicrobial.
So what is a Manuka?
Yeah, it's from a plant from Australia.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's not a local thing because it doesn't grow here. It tends to be pricey. And Manuka honey is, but it's incredibly antimicrobial. So it's another thing you can take medicinally regularly to help prevent colds and flu.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so that's how I would use that. But if you have a cough, you can try it. It tastes a little different from regular honey. I gave it to a child once, and she gagged on it.
Uh-oh.
Is it because it
takes on the flavor of the plant?
You know, it tasted nice and sweet to me. I had no problem with it, but you never know people's palates.
I'll bet it has something to do with the plant.
Well, if people are used to eating, you know, sort of a bland diet that has a lot of bread and peanut butter and French fries and, you know, whatever, you know, people are eating that when they're not getting their produce in.
Kind of like drinking pedestrian coffee and tea.
I suppose. But I have an issue where, you know, that licorice is a wonderful, it's a wonderful herb in many ways. And there's a constituent in licorice called glycyrrhizin that stimulates your adrenals, and it's good for people who have low blood pressure and get dizzy easily and have blood sugar issues. It's a really good herb for those people. But if you don't have those issues, there are other properties of licorice that are very helpful because it has beta-sitosterols. It helps to balance your adrenals. And it also is a wonderful anti-inflammatory, especially for the digestive system. You don't need the glycyrrhizin for those properties. So there's a way to take the glycyrrhizin out of licorice, and then you can make it into a powder or a chewable form. And then it's a wonderful digestive tonic. So people are really funny about whether they like licorice or not. Either they do or they don't. So if you're like me, when I was a kid, my parents would bring home anisette toast, which a lot of Italian, you know, we're from New York, and they had Italian pastries. And
I grew up on that.
Yeah, and so because your father probably liked it.
He loved it.
And I don't. Did your mother like it?
She was okay with it.
But your father really liked it.
Yeah.
Because
Italian. My dad also used to, you know, there's an anisette liqueur, and he used to like to buy that too.
That's right. So if you're of certain ethnicities, they favor liquor. So Greek people and Greek and Italian people, they like licorice.
Yeah.
And it happened that in our house, my parents liked it too. And they the thing that I remember is the anisette toast. And then sometimes we get licorice candy. Remember Good and Plenty's? And then there's licorice all sorts, which I had been exposed to. And then when I got older, I know Good and Plenty.
You had to shake it like it was a train.
A train, because it was Choo Choo Charlie.
The engine, Choo Choo Charlie.
Yeah, that's funny. So, God.
That's weird how those things get stuck in your brain.
So when I started getting more holistically oriented, I would go to the health food store and I'd buy the boxes of the licorice candy, which I don't buy now because they have wheat in them, unfortunately.
Oh, that's not
they
good.
They stick the licorice candy. It's molasses and licorice and anise, and I really enjoy this. But I have to keep a bottle of the deglycerinated licorice tabs on my desk to give as a sample to patients because some patients gag on it.
Really?
They can't even keep it in their mouth.
Oh, I love licorice.
I know. But some people, it's a very foreign taste to them and they can't deal with it. So I give them a sample, and if they hate it, I either don't give it to them or I give it to them in capsules. And but a lot of people also love it and they're just fine with it. It depends on the person as to, how much they're going to like that licorice. So anyway, so we talked about ginger as a way to, keep your health in check and to help to move through your illness a little bit faster using the neti pot, gargling. And then what I'll do, another thing I want to talk about is cell salts. I love to use cell salts when trying to help people get rid of stuff.
So what is a cell salt?
Cell salt is interesting. It's kind of like homeopathy. What it is, they're tissue salts. They're just compounds, the mineral salts that are used in our bodies for various functions.
And they come from?
So there's a guy named Schussler. And Schussler's the guy who put together the cell salts. He put together the theory of the cell salts and tested their uses and made them popular. And there are only 12 of them. So with homeopathic remedies, you can make a homeopathic remedy out of anything. But cell salts, there's only 12 of them, and that's it. And they come in 3 potencies. They come in 3X, 6X, and 12X. That's it. And so depending on the nature of the condition, if it's very external and basic, you use a 3X. If it's sort of in the middle, you use a 6X. And if it's an ongoing condition that you're trying to treat, you use a 12X. And that's it. And so when I say X, that means it's a dilution. It means, so the tissue salts, like I said, there's only 12 of them. I won't list them all off, but for example, there's silica, there's calcarea phosphorica, there's magnesia phosphorica, and there basically is calcium phosphate, magnesium phosphate, silica cell salt, salt cell salt, sodium
right.
chloride.
Right, so some are actually salts, and then some
they're
are,
all salts.
They're all salts.
They're all salts. Salt is a chemical term. It's a chemical term that means when you have put an acid and base together, you will get solutes that come out. You'll get new compounds that come out of the merging of an acid and base.
Mm-hmm.
And the compounds that come out of the merging of an acid and base are called salts.
Okay.
And so salt is a generic term that we use to mean sodium chloride. But in chemistry, salt is more of a generic term. So cell salt doesn't necessarily mean sodium chloride. Having said that, natrum muriaticum, which is salt, culinary salt, is one of the tissue salts. So natrium muriaticum, you would use it. So there are indications for it, just like with homeopathy. So the different tissue salts have different indications. And I love to use them to help to get rid of mucus that you don't want to be there anymore. So natrium muriaticum, for example, if the mucus is coming out and it's on the thin side and it's kind of egg whitey and clear, you use natrium muriaticum. If the mucus that's coming out is kind of thick and it's on the grayish, whitish, grayish side, you're going to use calimuriaticum, which is Latin for, or Greek. No, I guess it's Latin for potassium chloride. If it's on the thick, greenish, yellowish, greenish side, which is, quite honestly, that's one of the most common cell salts I give out, is calisulf, which is potassium sulfate. That is probably the most common cell salt that I give out because people have these infections that have been smoldering for a long time Mm-hmm. And they have a lot of this green pus and this green mucus. And that's really common. I see it a lot. Mm. And so I'll give Calisulf for that. Then there's calcium sulfate, Calcsulf, which I give very frequently too. And that's where your mucus is just tinged with, it's whitish, but it's tinged with yellow. I give that out a lot too. Those are probably the two most common ones I give out are because you know, if you're listening to this and you get sinus infections or you get bronchitis and you're coughing up goop, you know that a lot of times it's either thick and green or it's white with slightly yellowish. And so, therefore, those cell salts are going to be used a lot. And probably the third most common is natrum muriaticum because you get that just that runny, clear, egg whitey mucus.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's a lovely conversation.
It's clinical.
I know it's clinical.
So I really like the tissue salts. I really do. I really like elder as an herb. It's one of my favorite herbs. I take it most days myself. It's a great preventative for the flu, and it treats the flu. It's been studied to treat the flu. And there are preparations of elder that you can take. You can take tincture. You can take glycerites, where it's extracted in glycerin. And it's a wonderful herb to help to counteract, to prevent the flu, and also to treat it. It's really, really nice that way. You know, good old echinacea. We talk about echinacea a lot. Echinacea is good. And echinacea isn't always my first choice, but echinacea can be really helpful if you can take enough of it. Echinacea can give you a sore tummy. It can upset your stomach a little bit. For myself, I tend to prefer Eleuthero. And Eleuthero is a wonderful immune tonic. And I think people forget about it. People don't know what it is. It used to be called Siberian ginseng. It's now known as Eleuthero. And I like to take the solid extract. You can take the tincture. It's very tasty. It's a little on the sweet side. And you can take it as a preventative for colds and flus. That's a really good thing to do, too. Vitamins and minerals. Vitamin A is a wonderful antiviral. And then we talk about ACE and zinc. And those are good things to help prevent colds and flus. And so vitamin A is a great antiviral. We talked about C earlier. Vitamin E is also a great antioxidant. And then zinc is a wonderful immune tonic. It's a wound healer. And zinc can kill viruses locally. So that's why we do zinc lozenges. You have to be careful with zinc lozenges because they can give you an upset stomach. So if you're going to try the zinc lozenge thing, I would do it with some ginger. All right. So that was some good information about talking about your colds and flus, how to get through it if you've had it for a long time, talk about rest, talk about how you eat and some things you can take. So we'll wrap up on that. And we'll talk about, perhaps we'll talk more specifically about lung health next week. We'll speak specifically about the lungs.
Mm.
Yeah, so lung health. All right, so you've been listening to 91.7 WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch. You've been listening to Radio Naturopath. And we will be back next week in this new year, 2017, with more Radio Naturopath here on WHUS 91.7 FM.